Howdy. This is an archived version of a two-part interview with Julian Smith, author of Trust Agents, Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust, initially broadcast on CKUT 90.3 FM. Part 1 was aired on Tuesday, September 15th, 2009, and Part 2 was aired on Tuesday, September 22nd, 2009.
Kind of cool. No matter how much I've done radio, I never get sick of radio.
What was the motivation for the book? Where'd you come up with the idea?
Well, motivation and the idea are two different things. The motivation was like, for the hell of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I think people make it in too much of a big thing. It's like, oh, I don't know, a book, it sounds so important, you know? It must be something like similar to any other medium. You're just like, oh, this is so daunting, I can't do it. Actually, we do talk about that in the book too, but the reason
I just haven't
for
gotten
the,
there yet.
nice. But the idea behind the book was just like me and Chris had come back from a specific conference that we go to every year, mm-hmm. and we were like, who are these guys? These guys, like, either they represent companies, but they just show up. They don't like pimp their company. All they do is just be people, and it works. What's the deal with that? Mm-hmm. And we started thinking about it. We already knew we were writing a book. But that's where the expression trust agents come out. You know, individuals that, because the channels are so, there's so many channels, and because the cost of maintaining a channel is no longer like, you don't need a radio tower anymore, and you don't need a printing press anymore. Now you just need very affordable stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of power can really be put into the hand of like one person. And so that's why we call those people trust agents. We think they're able to develop influence and trust really quickly. Originally, me and Chris had been working together for several years.
Okay.
So we were just like, we wrote an ebook, which was based off a talk that we did at a pod camp one time, I think maybe in Toronto. Pod camps are like this like series of what they call unconferences. Conferences is run in a grassroots way.
Yeah. 19th and 20th.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. We have one in Montreal.
Yeah, it's all fine and dandy to do a podcast using computer power. However, the resources here, such as the digital recorder, the supercharged powered various programs,
yeah.
Plus then the other thing that I find extremely invaluable is just the sort of practice in terms of where, it's one of the things that drives me crazy about Mitch Joel is just he thinks that, okay, every single word that comes out of his mouth needs to be recorded and thousands of people need to listen to it.
Right.
Sorry, Mitch. It's not the case.
You know, I'm going to tell him you said this.
I will bear it.
Yeah.
But it is then, I find just the technique of making what I call entertaining radio.
Oh, absolutely.
Where I then just come up with sort of outrageous statements just so it's designed to get a rise from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then you then can make something, oh, that sounds interesting. And
there
then they
go.
Keep paying attention as opposed
exactly.
to, okay, this is what you want to call it.
And that works in regular conversation too. Just say mm-hmm. hyperbolic, crazy things mm-hmm. and just see how people respond. They end up much more entertained than if you ask them about their job or whatever. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you had the prior history with Chris then. I thought this was sort of like a one-shot deal where you had met him at PodCamp and then said, wow, that was my envisioning. So then can I get the backstory? How did you guys meet? Where to come? Then what had you done previously? This ebook sounds very interesting and so on.
Yeah. So for what happened is it's really, we met at a pod camp in 2005 or 2006. I forget which. The first one, whenever that happened to be. And we just, like, he was wearing this t-shirt that he had painted himself, which was like an RSS logo. It was really geeky. It had an iPod on it and stuff like that. But he had made his own t-shirt. I was like, that is so badass. This is amazing. Can I say ass? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. And fucking shit.
Damn. All right. So I can. So I saw that. I was like, this is so cool. So I remember talking to him about that. And at the time, he had organized that event, but he was like, right now he's kind of a internet superstar or something like that. But at the time, he was like, we were both regular dudes. We were like, whatever. But we got along really well, and I appreciated the t-shirt. He eventually gave me that t-shirt, and I have it still now. And we just kind of ended up collaborating on a bunch of stuff. We would go to pod camps together, a bunch of them, and just like do talks together. The talk led to an ebook. The ebook led to a book deal, which led to the book.
And so the ebook is sort of for lack of a better term, first draft of Trust Agents?
It's like a seed. It's like the seed idea is there. So you can, if you read the ebook, which is called Trust Economies, which isn't a great title, but whatever, wrote that, and then was like, well, we could take this and make it into something. So we just kind of like threw the ebook out at a couple publishers, and they bit. So we kept going.
Very cool. Okay, I'm gonna have to file that away.
He never really had a podcast. I had a podcast for a long time, and I did radio for like many years before that. And I still love it. I love radio so much, you know? I don't know what it is, but it's like when I've done like maybe between five and 10 radio interviews in the past week. And every time I'm like, this is amazing. I never get over the fact that it's like, I'm on the airwaves. This is great. Yeah, we just ended up working together on a bunch of stuff. Like we did ebooks and we did a bunch of other stuff too. And it just turned into, you know, it's just like, oh, and then, so we just keep getting bigger ideas. Like a little bit of this, of exactly what I'm saying right now is in the book, this kind of stuff. Like, why not you, you know, why can't you do it? The answer is you can. And the only thing that's going to stop you is people saying, oh, wait, you don't have the right degree or you don't have the right credentials. Yeah. But as long as you can bullshit your way past a lot of that.
And it's not even, to me, it's not even bullshit necessarily.
That's right.
It's
no,
a sort
but
of thing of just,
once you get to the other end, you're like, wait, everybody here is just as smart as me. They're not smarter. They just acted like they were bigger than they were. And now that I'm on this other end, it's not even a big deal.
Finding those gate jumpers.
Yeah, that's right. That's the expression we use, gate jumpers.
Yes.
Like, screw you, we're just going to go for it. It doesn't matter what people say. And that's what led to the book. We were just like, we're going to write a book. And we'd be like, but can you just do that? And be like, goddamn right we can. Somebody said something to me recently. Let's say you're a person with 100 IQ. IQ doesn't mean anything, but you see my point. And would you be able to tell the difference between somebody who had 150 IQ and 170? You wouldn't. You'd be like, this guy is really smart. And so in that way, all the people that have all these successes, you know, whether it be writing a book or having your own radio station or whether it be, you know, whatever achievement it is, you're like, oh my God, that's impossible. But in fact, there's very little difference. You know, you could just go up there if you wanted to. You'd be like, oh, no, now here I am. You know, just keep looking for the next ledge and nobody's going to stop you as long as you believe.
Exactly. If you keep going until somebody else says, eventually somebody will tell you to stop.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I want to be president. I can go as much as I want. Somebody's going to say, no, you can't do that.
No, but nobody, that's too hard. We want to go for easier things.
Exactly.
It's a hard job, man.
Just for the record, I am up to page, so we can get this on, what is the 21st century equivalent of tape? I'm up to page 57.
Nice.
Nice. I should have been up to at least 194.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to teach myself to not sub-vocalize. Do you sub-vocalize when you read? You know what that means?
Talking while you read?
Like, so some people move their lips when they read, and that means that they can only read as fast as they talk. And some people, even if they don't move their lips, they act in their throat like they're talking. And I do that, and I've done that for years. I thought that's how you read. I'm doing air quotes right now, guys. But I'm learning not to sub-vocalize, and it's improving my speed like crazy.
And you take your finger and go just straight down the page.
Straight down the page.
Straight down the middle of the page.
Yeah.
The thing that I find difficult with the reason why it's so slow is just finding the time to read.
You know, originally I moved to Boston, to tell you the truth. I moved to Boston for 3 months, which wasn't the smartest thing to do. It was all right there, though. It was a nice town. But the way that we ended up writing the majority of the book was in Google Documents. So as some people that are listening know, there's an alternative to Office, Microsoft Office, that is online, and it's called Google Docs, and it's free. And so the advantage of it is that multiple people can edit at the same time. So we would get like, okay, 2 p.m., we're going to write till 3 p.m. It doesn't matter how long, you just need to put a certain amount of time in every day. And so we would get on the document at the same time. It'd be like, okay, I'm going to edit this section, I'm going to write this section, okay. And then, so we could simultaneously see what parts we were changing, what we were doing. So that collaborative process is even easier than actually writing a book side by side, because we couldn't edit the same document and we'd have to, you know, sort of stick parts together like a puzzle piece. But we didn't have to do that with Google Documents because all of it just got integrated into itself. And even though we ended up further apart, this is very interesting, even though it's further apart and you think it would be harder, the process ended up being easier than it ever would have been in person.
So a combination of Google Docs and chat, I'm going to hit this section, and what do you think
that's
about
right.
this?
We could get on Skype, or we get on, you know, AOL Instant Messenger, or whatever we were using, and then Google Docs on the other side, and then just write, and then like, hey, what are you working on right now? Can I see? Whatever.
Now in terms of the nuts and bolts,
right.
On page 15, it's the one thing that jumped out at me is there's one paragraph here which I sort of read and said, that sounds very much like myself. patting myself on the back, and there was no, you didn't think about me at all while you were writing the book.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, except when I took bathroom breaks, and I was like, yeah, Chris Hann, yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to read you the paragraph and ask you who, if there was anybody specific, or who or how it got based on. Yeah, it's basically the definition of trust agents, which are, they have established themselves as being non-sales-oriented, non-high-pressure marketers. Instead, they are digital natives using the web to be genuine and to humanize their business. They're interested in people, prospective customers, employees, colleagues, and more. They've realized that those tools that enable more unique, robust communication also allow more business opportunities for everyone.
Yeah.
Was there anybody in specific that you were thinking of as it was coming up? Were you sort of saying, this is how I would like to describe myself?
I think a lot of people get it naturally, right? So, I mean, this is the funny thing is we wrote a whole book about how to be human, even though everybody knows how. You know, like you and me, we talk around a water cooler, right? If we have the same job. We take our coffee break together, we go smoke a cigarette, whatever we do. And we can talk like human beings, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're dealing with a customer. Well, I better put on my customer voice. Am I like work voice or whatever. But so that basically part of the book was like shutting all of that down and be like, are you kidding me? Please, like, let's just communicate. And it's always been true, and I've said this so many times, it's so true. Jeffrey Gittimer wrote a book called The Little Red Book of Sales. It is about sales, but that's not the point. The point is people want to do business with people that they like. But what I'm trying to say is that we like to deal with, we want to do business with the people that we enjoy spending time with. We hope that they're good too, and if they're good and we like them, then that's perfect. But even though all things being equal, we do want to do business with people that we like, and all things still being not so equal, we still want to do business with people that we like. And so the core of this, and somebody else talked about how intimacy was important for trust, and we think that's the place, the internet is the place where it's easy to develop intimacy with people. Not like we're naked in a room together, but more like you know, we can talk about our day-to-day, our mundane stuff. It's you and me talking about how we were in traffic that puts us closer together, not you and I talking about big, dense stuff. It's the commonplace, everyday, oh man, can you believe I stubbed my toe? Oh my God, I do that all the time. You know, it's these simple acts, and those interactions happen all the time online, especially with things like Twitter, where it's so easy to spread little messages. So that allows you to develop a lot of tight relationships with people, develop more social capital, and as a result of that, become more influential with your blog or whatever it is you do.
And so, yeah, to get back, was there anybody specific, or it was just sort of a hodgepodge of coming together? How did you come up with that definition?
So we when we got together at this conference, we had this one guy who works for Network Solutions that we thought of. His name is Shashi. And he, like you said, he just goes around. He doesn't try to sell domain names to anybody. He just, you know, shows up and he's like, hey, what's going on? How are you? How are you? And I saw him again at Gnomedex in Seattle last month. So he's always just hanging out. And but somehow he leaves you with a positive impression. I know tons of people from different companies like this. My friend Richard at eBay does the same thing. He runs the ebayinc.com blog where they talk about eBay and what it's like inside eBay and stuff like that. You know, Scoble did that for Microsoft when he worked for Microsoft. And these are the people that we thought of. Scoble is a super important example, Robert Scoble. And because he would do things like, you know, Internet Explorer obviously comes from Microsoft, but he would be like, you know what's amazing? Firefox. And he would talk about somebody else's browser. And we talk about that as being kind of a trust agent move in the sense that when you're talking about somebody's competition, then at that point, it's like, whoa, this guy must be really telling the truth. He's talking about somebody's own competition and saying that their competition is good. This guy sounds like a genuine, honest guy, right? And so the people that do that naturally, which is all kinds of people that we know, you know, you're like, oh yeah, you know, he's better looking than me or whatever, you know, things like that.
Chris Zeke Hand is in studio with me today. Good morning, Chris.
Howdy. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Last week we had Trust Agents Part 1, and now it's time for Trust Agents Part 2.
Yes, there. It's the sort of thing where, yes, my friend Julian Smith, and I was very, very proud of him and also impressed that he came out with his book. It's like an impressive thing. It's called Trust Agents, Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust, which while on the surface of it sounds reasonable. It's like one of those Dale Carnegie things, how to win friends and influence people. And I think they were riffing off of that. Excuse me. It was actually the sort of thing where, to me, it's almost sort of like a manifesto of how to be a yes man. You know, the yes men who went out and sort of pranked, what is it, Texaco and so on?
Well, Amy Goodman just mentioned them. They they published a fake copy of the New York Times.
Yes, exactly. And they read this book, and it is pushing that edge and so on. So I find it endlessly fascinating. Plus, I saw him last weekend at PodCamp, where I suddenly realized, oh, geez, man, he is an amazing public speaker. Mm-hmm. And it was the sort of thing where he can have a crowd of 500 in the palm of his hand, which I'm not certain I like, but or I'm jealous, or I don't know what it is, and so on. But I was very, very impressed.
There's something that I heard last week, like I actually retained it, and it sunk in. You know, we've taken so much information, and not all of it sticks to the wall. But there was something he said, which is that we like doing business with people that we like.
Yes.
So that stuck.
Yeah, it's that, although Schwartz's doesn't follow that.
No, they just sell.
The whole idea there is that they have the grumpy waiters.
Oh, the grumpy waiters.
And the grumpy waiters with attitude who want you in and out as quickly as possible, and everybody's, oh my God, this is so authentic. Which, yeah, for whatever, but I imagine the people who run Schwartz's are not really up to reading this.
I'm looking forward to see if there's anything in this that will stick. So.
Lots.
Let's have a listen.
Okay.
You're at a time where you just run out of energy and you're like, I can't do this anymore. So Chris is amazing at that. He manages to spend, I would say, like the large portion of his waking hours on Twitter. And his devotion to, I mean, what some people would call his fan base or his army or whatever, has made them extremely devoted to him. You know, that's a basic human thing that we do. When, you know, when I give you some food, when you don't have food, then you're going to give me food eventually back. And I think those little acts of I'm giving something, you know, so when we give naturally, like when we have blogs that has like, oh yeah, here's all this secret info, here's this stuff for you, or here's some kind of act that I am showing that there's a certain importance. So it's weird because we simultaneously hold these two ideas in our head. Number one, this person has 90,000 followers on Twitter. Number two, he knows my name and knows my birthday, which Chris does, by the way. He knows everybody's birthday. He sends them personalized notes all the time, not on Facebook, but he sends them to them by email. He's like, hey, what's going on? Sometimes there's a blog post, you know, for X or Y person. It's your birthday. I really love this guy. And then simultaneously, you're like, and yet he has 90,000 followers. So it is a tight line to walk, but it's like we talked about generals and armies, you know, the analogy. It's like if you know not only the soldier's name, but his nickname, that kind of gets you a little bit step.
So you're saying that in terms of there is no real cap limit, it's just what you can handle. And I'm certain that there's certain people who can't handle being in a room with more than four people.
Right.
And then there are other people who can handle being, yeah, because I just find, yeah, my limit is somewhere under 1,000.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, I mean, that's it, right? But the reason Scoble would add anybody, and we talked about this at some point, is because he is media. He's like, media doesn't cap the number of people that want to watch it. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I am a channel, and if many people want to tune into the channel, I'm not going to prevent them from doing that. They're opting in to wanting to follow him. And so in a way, it's like showing an act and saying, yes, I am committing to you in a tiny little way.
Although there, that's where I think I end up capping it, because I realize, yes, there's medium, given that I was, especially with the gallery, publicizing contemporary Canadian art, definitely needed. But then in terms of, I would make the line that there really is no distinction between my work life and my personal life.
Right.
And then we're, if I'm always working, then at which point that's fine to grow it as large as you can so that you are that media channel like Scoble and so on. That's fine. To me, being able to have that sort of off time, that personal thing, and that's where I suddenly say, oh no, I want to be real friends with these people. It's my Facebook, the litmus test right now is, will you say hi to me on the street?
Ah.
And I have passed by people who have looked me straight in the eye, not recognized me at all, and you're gone.
Flushed, you're done. Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I like that attitude. It's interesting because on the web, like all of our interactions are in public view. So if I am on Twitter and I respond to you, even though I may not respond to other person X, it shows that I'm personally, if I'm personally involved with you, it shows that I am personally involved with people. So the act on the one with the one person shows the many the kind of relationship that I like to have, you know? So I guess as long as, even if you don't answer anyone, everyone, if you can, try to show, like, that you care with the people that you do interact with, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certain people eat, like, Lance Armstrong eats 10,000 calories a day. Mm-hmm. Other people eat like a bird. Right. Everybody has their own preferences.
Yeah, we're all different.
Yeah, how'd you coin the term trust agents?
I don't know. We were sitting in a bar. And we had already written a book proposal, and I look back on it now, and it sucked, by the way. It was really bad. I was like, what the hell? This is terrible. And the principles were still kind of the same. But when we realized that the focus had to be on the individual and what the individual was capable of, which is really like the strength of the web, the fact that, yes, like we can have these really powerful channels, but now one person can control, like, you know, we think about huge numbers of people. Gary Vaynerchuk with like 500,000 followers, he can send something out and like it's a nuclear blast, you know? It's so we were sitting in a bar and we were thinking about like who are these people? What are they? Is this a book about the way people do business, or is this a book about the people and how they do it? And when we decided we would focus on the people, we were like, well, they're almost like secret agents. And so we went from that to the idea of trust agents because they do it in plain view. I don't know how exactly we came from one to the other, but I remember everything about that room and all that stuff. We were just sitting at the airport, both of us together waiting for a plane.
Dorval or Boston?
No, we were in, where were we? In Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, O'Hare.
Okay.
The worst airport in the world.
In reading it, I'm always sort of flipping between, is this a business book on how to do business, or is it a self-help book on how to make yourself better? And that right sort on. Of juxtaposition, obviously it's both. Yeah. Did you have a specific concept that started, morphed, and changed? Mm-hmm. Did you sort of flip-flop between switching chapters and I just haven't read enough chapters?
Well, we had a lot of stuff that we cut out of the book, mm-hmm. That's true. But at the same time, I guess for me, I've always been, I never really worked at a company. I've had Joe jobs like everybody else has had a Joe job, but very much my personal sort of interest in writing the book was in getting individuals to get the ability to control their lives more. And that's always been super important, to allow them more freedom. If they be able to make money in a different way, so they don't have to hold down a job the way most people have to hold down a job, you know? And so I would always pepper that in. I'd be like, okay, but you know, and so how will this help you free you from this? How will this help you get more independence? And all the whole time, I do read a lot of those self-help books are totally crap. But I always feel like if I'm going to read, I keep reading them, and I'd be like, if I find one little piece of information that I think is valuable and that's not bullshit, then I'll be like, okay, great. So I have this, and then I'll keep like just like I'm suffering, and then I'll find one little thing inside a book. So in a way, I think I just care a lot about people, and I see people in certain circumstances, and I was like, I wish these people could just be more successful in what they are trying to achieve, but they don't quite know how. So in that sense, it is very much it is about empowerment and teaching people that they can.
And so then you and you were going at it more as a sort of like a self-help book than as the business thing, and the business was
I mean, it's clearly a business book because it's about the ability to develop on audiences and all this stuff, and how you know, it's also about the message and how you can't control the message anymore and all of these traditional business things, and it is a business book in the business category. But that said, the focus has always been on it's the people, each individual, how can we help each of them independently? And that was always a big deal to me. I don't know if I wanted to, because self-help has such a stigma, but I really thought about the individual reading it and going, how am I going to help this person reading it? Not just how am I going to teach them about a phenomenon, but how am I going to help them? You know, so in a way, I guess so.
No, it comes through loud and clear, and I don't view self-help books as a sort of stigma.
One of the reasons we divided it into six things is because we knew a lot of these people personally that we think about when we think about trust agents or people that are able to develop these huge audiences. And we look at these six things that we have and that we outline in the book, and you don't have to be able to do all of them, but we would be like, okay, so what about this guy? Is this guy, like, and me and Chris would be sitting, you know, in my kitchen or whatever, and we'd be like, so is this guy a trust agent? They'd be like, yes. Well, what does he do? And so we'd be like, well, it's a one of us thing, or him, it's a leverage thing. What do each of them do? And so you're not a person that can have your own ideas? I mean, I'm not sure that I believe that there are such people, but let's say they have a lot of difficulty with it. Then there are still five other things within the book that they may be capable of doing. I don't think you need to have all of them. I just think that you combine some with others, and depending, we actually almost wrote sections into the book where it'd be like, what happens when you combine this with this? And then here's this special, unique thing that happens. And then combine, you know, number one with number six, and number five with number two, and so forth. I mean, but making your own game is largely about differentiation, you know, whatever it is, whichever method you use to do that. And it is possible that some people can't do it, but it is so important because, I mean, and so we analyze this in the chapter. We talk about how if you are, like, let's say, you know, I'm looking, like, we go to Scoble, we talk about Scoble like we did before. Like, oh, okay, well, Scoble did this, so I'm going to do that too. And then at that point, you're just kind of chasing his thing, you know? You can't write the same book as somebody else wrote. You always have to transform the game in some way. The ability to take, to beg, borrow, steal from, like, other categories or other industries is totally invaluable, right? There's actually a great book on differentiation like that called Blue Ocean Strategy. And it's all about, it's a business book, pure and simple, but written by two French people. And it has sold over 2 million copies. It's huge. It's so massive, this book. But it's so great. And it's all about differentiation. It uses an example of Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil took out the animals. They took out, and there used to be in some circuses, like star performers that were big names, like big important clowns. But then Cirque du Soleil was like, well, nobody really cares or knows their names. So it's like, wipe it out. And the animals, wipe it out. People think it's dirty. Concession stands, wipe them out. And instead, it's like, now it's not just, it's theater also. Okay, so, you know, so it's like lowering the importance of certain things, adding to the importance of other things, and then trying to create a whole other thing that your category doesn't do, you know? So because of that, Cirque du Soleil stands on its own, and now other people copy it. And that's the exact process that we want to create. We want to create the ability where it's just, I think your gallery is a great example of that. That it's like, you know, well, it's not quite this, and it's not quite that. It's in between, and here you go. Now you have to compete with what I do, not the other way around. I just finished a book about marathons. This guy, Dean Karnazes or something, I forget how to pronounce his last name, and he ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 different states in the United States. And he's really well known as an ultra-marathoner. And so, I mean, the book was all right, and it's, you know, I expected it to be have more like human spirit kind of stuff, but it didn't have very much. But it had a description of this statue called The Awakening, a sculpture, which is, I don't know, somewhere in the U.S., but I Googled it, and it's just, like, amazing. Like, it's a giant. So you can see its legs, like, coming out. It's like a giant coming out of a grave. So you can see the head, and you can see the eyes. Sorry, not the eyes, but you can see the hands coming out, but you don't see the torso. So it's, like, these independent parts of this giant coming out of the earth. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I'll read a whole book for that. I read 50, over 50 books a year. I read a book a week. So for that reason, I try to always go as fast as I can and stuff like that.
How do you set up your reading path, since I'm obviously not the one to do it?
You know, I made it a priority. I decided that, you know, some people make exercise a priority and whatever it is that they do. And I was like, the earlier I do it, whatever it is I'm doing, the more likely it is to get done because it makes it into a routine. Like if you wake up and you go jogging, then you're always going to wake up and go jogging. So to me, I wake up after I take a shower and so forth. I head to the same breakfast place every day. I sit at the counter and I read for about 2 or 3 hours while drinking coffee. And so I've been able to, since January 1st, I have read, I don't know, probably like 40 books since then. And I plan on continuing for as long as I can.
Very cool. What are your hopes for the book?
We have already hit the New York Times. So New York Times bestseller list has last week or whatever. We ended up at number 13 or something. And today we hit the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list also. Mm-hmm. So I'm really pleased with its success. Everything that I do, and the expression that we don't say this expression in the book, but we should have if we had thought about it at the time, is every game has its chips, like poker. And you're never supposed to really cash out. If you're playing the game of life well, you just take your chips and move them to a bigger table. Mm-hmm. And always be moving them to a bigger table. on a bigger table. So all I'm planning to do is whatever chips we end up with at the end of this, we take those chips and we cash them in at the next table and then just keep moving up, you know?
Okay, so it is the sort of thing of, you see it as a progression, so either to another book or...
We have a second book proposal we're working on now.
Oh, very cool.
So that should be good. And then other stuff just tends to come up. Like, the more stuff like this you do, and the more, again, we're back to gates. As soon as you get through the gate, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, that guy got through the gate. Holy crap, you know? And you're like, well, it's a big deal, but let's pretend it's a big deal so you can give me this thing I want, you know? I usually compare how I'm doing to how other people are doing by age. I'm 30 years old. So I'm like, yeah, what the hell, you know? I mean, I'm doing okay for my age, I think. And I think more than anything, I just want to sort of make sure that I stay balanced. Like, it's so easy. Like, especially when you get a book, it's a New York Times bestseller, a Wall Street Journal bestseller, and all this stuff. It's like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to keep doing this. And then that's death, right? Like, you have to have a decent, balanced life. And I think that's another thing that I really want to focus on. Be like, do something that can't be sold in any way. You know, like, do, like, random landscape photography, which nobody will ever buy. You know?
They do.
I'll make sure to make them bad.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they're bad naturally. I don't have to make them bad. Just whatever it is that you can do, that I can do, that I can spend time where it's like, yeah, this is just for me or whatever. I'm all about it. Definitely.
Okay.
I don't have a specific plan. I'm just going to let it roll. The whole thing is about empowerment to me, you know? I really think, like... I don't think I'm exceptional in any particular way. Like, I just refused to pay attention to people's rules, and I kept doing whatever the hell I was doing, and now it ended up with me on the New York Times bestseller list. And I'm like, really? If I just keep pushing it, how far can I go, right? And I think that a lot of people should learn from that. They should be like, no, I'm going to quit my job. Yeah, screw it, man. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to go on. You know, it's like whatever you decide you're going to take, or you decide you have the right to, then people will let you through. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? So I'm just like, all these people that I know, friends of mine, like full-time jobs and so forth, they're not particularly happy. And I'm like, dude, go do something. Like, this is your life. This is what you got, you know? That's my message, is like, this is your life. It's about time that you did something with it that you were proud of or whatever, you know? I guess that's the main thing that I want to tell whoever's listening.
Okay.
If anyone is listening.
I think there are people who are listening. This is awesome. So far, it's been a very, very good read for me.
Nice.
Sort of keep saying, okay, yeah, I'm doing that. Yeah, I've done that. And you're just putting it into words, that stuff that I haven't quite figured out, or you're using different words than what I'm doing.
Right. Good. I mean, that's good. You got to start from somewhere. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, but like I said, it goes back to being a basic human being and knowing how to treat people well and all this stuff. But it's like using those extra tools that we have to do it at a distance, you know? So long as people can do that, I think they have it in their body. They know how. They just need to maybe remember.
Yeah, and it's also the sort of thing you can take everything in here and then sort of separate it from the computer and still do everything.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Absolutely right. You know, it's not even about technology. It's just about people and how they work, I guess.
Cool. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Hi, this is Luca from Ostara, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.